Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Eerie Encounters, Volume 3, Story 1. Sometime around 10 or 12 years ago, before I joined the military, I was living in my dad's hometown in the Philippines after he retired from service. They have a lot of their own ghost stories there, some downright myths, folklore kind of stuff, others being unexplainable and not quite disprovable. Some people say that at a young age we can see ghosts and spirits, and as you get older you lose this ability. But some people retain the ability. I don't know what it is about Filipinos, but a lot of them that I know apparently retain that ability. Anyways, I used to play a lot of airsoft back then, and some of our games went on over the weekend, 2 days and one night. Well, during a day game, we're playing at my friend Dale's backyard. He owned a lot of property, and his backyard, it was just straight up jungle that took quite a few games, along with the help of the local squatter population, to establish a few usable trails. I'm walking point with my little six-man team of gun-toting, BB-spewing weekend warriors. Aren't we just so badass? Anyway, as I approached a certain area of the jungle, my friend Johnny's like, "Psst, don't walk there." And I'm like, "Well, why not?" And he replies, "Trust me, don't walk there." I'm thinking he senses enemies or something, but think nothing else of it. Sometime later, at our midday lunch break, I ask him, "What was that all about?" He says, "You don't want to know." Obviously, this makes me curious, and now I'm demanding find out what it is. When he reminds me of how some people can still see spirits, I instantly understand. He was pretty calm about it the whole time. I guess he had just gotten used to it. I don't think I played point man the rest of the day. I probably stayed closer to the main group. Well, some of the weirder stories in the Philippines are things like the Aswang or the Manangal, which are roughly the equivalent of vampire strange beings that have the ability to detach the upper body from the lower body at night and fly around. They supposedly have wings to feed on young children. I personally don't believe in that crap, but would like to see one if it exists. Anyway, we were playing a night game in Dale's backyard, and my team had set up an ambush position. Nobody ever thinks of ghosts or spirits or beings when we're playing it. It's not because we don't want to think of them, it's because we're so into the game. Sometime in when this new game started, we set up our ambush site. Someone on my team runs out of position, dropping his weapon, gasping for air and hollering, "Water, water!" Everyone kind of looks at each other and is like, "What?" And he explained he swears he saw the Manangal. Most of us don't believe it, and he swears he did. The odd thing is, both him and Johnny, same guy from the first story, both said they saw the tree, shrubs, saplings, whatever was there, and his position bent down, and kind of like how prop wash blows tall grass flat. The area he was sitting at before he took off had trees around 1.5 to 2 inches thick, nothing too big, but still odd considering no one heard any kind of wind strong enough to move trees or shrubs. His theory was that he encountered it, and I guess it flew off, and the wing wash from the half-bodied being flying around had moved those trees. Sounds hilarious and completely unreal to me, but hey, what if? One last thing is yet another Filipino guy I knew. This is when I was actually active duty on my second tour overseas. He had an icon of the Virgin Mary, which a lot of Filipinos carry in their cars or around their neck. When I asked where he got it from, he said someone had given it to him. He then told me how he always needs to wear it because if he doesn't, he sees things. I asked him something along the lines of, "Oh, so you can see ghosts, huh?" And he said, "Yeah, before it was bad. But when I wear this, not really. You know that area around Kamakura?" "Yeah, I saw a guy with no head there once. Didn't spook me really, but I couldn't pass the guy's story as fake. My mind is open to a lot of things. Anyway, I tell my wife, she's Japanese, this guy's story about the headless guy in Kamakura, and she proceeds to explain that when samurais were still common throughout Japan, a lot of people apparently were beheaded. guess that explains the headless spirit he saw. Story number two. So, me and a buddy go to the woods for a little overnight R&R to get out of town, relax a little. We drive down to a state forest area where we both have camped and hiked many times. There's a large parking area at the trailhead, and we notice the usually crowded parking lot was completely empty. Naturally, we get excited knowing we have the forest to ourselves. We left the parking area and headed down the trail, which runs down the middle of a large brushy field at the bottom of a valley. After hiking for about 15 to 20 minutes, the sun is starting to set. As we rounded a curve in the trail, we both noticed the smell of a fire and some movement. To our surprise, there is a large group of people at our favorite camping area. When we get closer, we realize that this is no ordinary campsite. First, the trail runs directly through the middle of the site. There are about 10 or 12 men and women dressed in settler or Amish-like clothing. Large tents made of log poles and canvas cotton tarps, a full-size solid oak dining table, and some chairs. A tree trunk with a 100-pound anvil mounted on top. Full blacksmith tools, oil lamps, large trunks, and stacks of cast-iron cookware. The really odd part is as we walk through the site, within feet of these people, we are in shock at the incredible campsite. Trying to be courteous, I greet them with a simple hello and a smile. Nothing. No acknowledgement at all. They didn't look at us, speak to us, or anything. We hiked further into the woods to our second favorite area and set up camp while discussing how odd it was. The best we could figure was that it was Amish people camping. We had no idea how or if Amish camped, but it seemed the most logical answer. At sunrise, my buddy says, "Hey, let's hike back to the car. I forgot my other pack of smokes." We arrive at the car and get ready for a great day of hiking when I suddenly realize that the Amish campers had vanished. Standing in the parking lot, I remember no vehicles when we pulled in. We quickly hike back to the Amish site from the night before and start snooping around. Nothing. No trace. No hot coals, no trash, not even disturbed or flattened grass areas. To this day, we have no idea what we saw. I'm not telling this as a ghost story. These people were as real as you or I. They were not transparent or blurry. We were not on drugs or drinking. How the hell do you get all that gear, a house pretty much, into and out of the woods? And how many trucks would you need to haul all that? These are questions I wish I had answers for. Story number three. I grew up around Portland, Oregon. Sometime around 97, 1998, I was living in an area called Rock Creek. Back then, it wasn't very developed. Not many houses and still a bunch of wood and farmland. It was an amazing place to be a kid. Behind my house, we had a large forest that went on for quite a ways. I never remember finding the end of it, and I spent all my time back there. One day, me and a couple of friends got up early and headed out into the woods. We planned to be out all day and had packed lunches, brought our random and overly large assortment of knives, water, whatever. We had been in the woods for about 3 hours, and we were a good ways in, but not too deep, when we sat down to have a snack. We had been laughing and talking about whatever 10- or 11-year-old boys talk about, when all of a sudden, we got really quiet. I began to get a really weird feeling, not so much of being watched, but more like we needed to shut up and do some watching. I could tell by the expression on my friend Miles' face that he felt it too. Our other friend Brandon was not blessed with our level of awareness, but he quickly got the idea. I remember it being too quiet in the woods, but I really didn't think about it at the time. We got up, got our stuff together, and started to walk again. We went on for maybe another 10 minutes in complete silence, and all the while I was getting more uncomfortable. It was like once I knew something was off, just kept getting more and more freaked out. Most of it was probably in my head, like when you buy a red car and then all you see is red cars, or if someone asked if you left the oven on and even though you know you didn't, you become so unsure that you have to drive home and check. So, we're coming up around a curve in the trail, walking into the sun, and I see something huge and white jump off a fallen tree that had been laying propped up off the ground. It was big and white, and I'll be damned if it didn't look exactly like Bigfoot. Needless to say, we just turned around and ran, screaming. I don't remember the trip back. All I know is that we did not stop until we were back on an honest paved road. Funnily enough, Brandon never saw anything. He just ran because we did. Miles did. But not good old oblivious Brandon. We didn't go back in those woods for the rest of the summer, but we talked about the beast every day. For years, I was convinced that I saw what I saw that day, but now that I'm older, I can't help but remember what wild imaginations we had, especially us three together. I guess I'll never really know. I've never been more terrified in the woods as I was then, when the beast popped out to say hello. I can't honestly say I saw Bigfoot that day, however, I can guarantee I have never run that fast before or since. Next story. The first story happened about 10 years ago when I was 17 or 18 years old. There's a park near my house. It's large, flat area with open-air tennis courts, two baseball diamonds, and a soccer field. The park is bordered on one side by a residential area, my neighborhood, and on the other side by a forest. Although the area is frequented by park police, me and a friend would often sneak onto the grounds at night and hang out near the forested edge, where we would smoke cigarettes and do other things we didn't want to do at my parents' place. One night, me and my friend were sitting in the dugout of one of the baseball diamonds. This part of the park was flush against the forest. Probably 10 feet away from us, the trimmed grass of the diamond gave way to fully grown untrimmed grass, and from there, another 15 feet to the edge of the forest. We were smoking and bullshitting when from the forest came a terrible cry. It sounded like something halfway between the shriek of a woman and the cry of an infant. Whatever made that sound was close to us, not more than a couple dozen feet into the woods. This was such a sudden and jarring noise that, believe it or not, we didn't immediately react. We just froze and stared at each other. We didn't say a word, and about 10 seconds passed. Then we heard it again. As soon as we heard it, the second time it was like a switch had been pulled, and we bolted away from the forest, running across the field towards my car. We made it to the car and drove home. I've since come to believe that what we heard was a fox. I've since heard the cry from time to time, and it's an eerie call indeed. But hearing it like that for the first time, and so close, was frightening. My second experience was also from a long time ago, when I was about 13 or 14 years old. When I was young, my parents would send me to Camp Glenkirk for a week over summer, a Christian sleepaway camp with an outdoor adventure theme. The week was spent rock climbing, canoeing, and the like. While at the camp, we stayed in one of three types of group housing. There were log cabins for the older kids, hoagies, a sort of large tent with a rounded top, and tree houses, which is where this story takes place. Our tree house was basically the bottom half of a single room elevated on wooden stilts, so it sat 10 feet above the forest floor. I say bottom half because, aside from a 3-foot barrier to keep kids from falling out of the treehouse, it was wallless and open to the elements. There was, however, a slanted wooden roof with overhangs to keep out rain. There was probably a mile or so between each of the living areas, so my treehouse group, myself, a counselor, and 6 or so other kids was more or less isolated in the woods. I've always had a touch of insomnia, and one night, towards the end of our trip, I was having trouble sleeping. It was very late. I didn't want to turn on my book light to read for fear of disturbing the other kids. It was relatively quiet, although with a full complement of noises one might expect in the middle of the forest on a summer night. I was just lying there thinking and listening. Gradually, I noticed that a particular sound seemed to be resolving from the rest of the nighttime noises. I first heard it as a distant rustling of leaves, but as I came closer, I recognized it as the sound of something disturbing the underbrush as it traveled through the woods. I listened, dully curious. Whatever it was definitely walking towards us, as after a couple of minutes, it was perceptibly louder. I began to notice the sound it made walking through the deadfall was consistent with the step-by-step walk of a person, not an animal. As whatever it was came closer, I could hear this distinctly, and by now it was very close indeed. They also knew by this point that it was arriving from the deep woods or the lake area to the south, not the outhouse kitchen area to the north, from which we might expect another group counselor to arrive late at night in the event of an emergency or something. Thinking this over, the next minute or so my original dull curiosity had transformed into something halfway between alarm and fear. I realized that very soon, whatever it is, would be entering the clearing around the treehouse. Quietly turned over, intending to sit up and peek over the treehouse wall. When I did this, I heard a soft rustling from within the treehouse to my left. All the other kids were asleep, but I saw that counselor was awake. Evidently, he had turned over in his cot to get my attention when he saw I was going to get up. He was lying down, but when we made eye contact, he held up one hand as if to say, "Stop." I obeyed, putting my head back down on the pillow. I could tell by the texture of the sound that the walker was now out of the deadfall of the woods and had entered the treehouse clearing. The slow walk plodded towards, then directly under the treehouse. I was very anxious because I knew that at this point it would either keep on going or turn and begin climbing the stairs. If it did begin climbing the stairs, something terribly strange was happening and I would have to do something. The walker emerged from under the treehouse, continued through the other side of the clearing, and from there back into the woods. Over the next couple of minutes, I listened to the diminishing sound until it was finally lost to distance, and I once again heard nothing but the typical peaceful nighttime noises. Eventually, I did fall asleep. The week of camp was over the next day, and I left. I never got a chance to talk to that counselor about what that was or what it might have been. Next story. Some background information. During World War II, my grandfather was a member of the Partisan movement in my country, one of the Balkan states. During the 4 years of the war, they covered most of the woods in the region with a network of supply drops, base camps, and hospitals. About 20 years ago, a few years before he died, he decided I was old enough to go with him through the woods and see some of the places that he fought at or was stationed at. One of these was an old hospital complex in the woods, about 25 kilometers from the house we lived in. He never spoke much of his time in the army during the war, mostly because they had to do some extremely unsavory things due to the needs of the times. I learned later that his platoon was the one covering the withdrawal from one of the field hospitals that was about to be overrun by the Italian army, supported by the local traders. Unfortunately, there was no way to get all the severely wounded men out, and they had to be left behind. Imagine, at that time, an 80-plus-year-old man trying to explain this to his grandson without breaking into tears. I certainly never saw that side of him before. To me, he was always the old colonel who never let his feelings show. In a way, looking back at it, it was his way of coming clean. Proper socialists didn't believe in God, so no way that he could talk to him about his past. So, background established. Here we are in the middle of nowhere, a pine forest that rarely, if ever, anyone goes into. All around us are 50-plus-year-old shacks and the remains of lean-tos, and you can still clearly see where the firing positions were made. During his explanation of what they did and how it all went down, suddenly we hear what sounds like a very, very silent gunfire in the distance. Imagine what an echo of a 30-30 sounds like, and you'll get a good idea. Tap, 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 tap. We looked around, see no one. A few seconds later again, the exact same noises. The man goes white. All of a sudden, he turns around and walks into the forest, and I, naturally curious as to what is going on, follow him. After a 10-minute trek, I find him, having lost him from my sight when he was literally running, again, 80-plus years old at the time, sitting on the wall of what looked to be an entrenched position, shaking and crying. Not knowing what to do, being 15 at the time before joining the army, I had no idea what PTSD can manifest as. I walked to him, only to see the remains of a rifle. Only the metal parts were still there, and a few bits sticking out of the ground. He tried to tell me something, but couldn't find the words for it. Instead, he just dropped to his knees and started furiously digging at the site. In a minute, I realized that they're not white bits, but human remains. Due to, I assume, the clay soil they were buried in, some pieces of the bone were still recognizable so many decades later. And then it hits me what the noises were and what we found. He told me later that when they were retreating, some of the wounded men from his platoon stayed behind to guard the retreat. Most of them were found, but some were still up on the hills decades later. Somehow, it seemed that this man, or whatever energy was left, realized that one of his old comrades was around and managed to signal, "Here I am. I died at my post. I just wanted someone to know." We left him there for the time being and went back down the hill. I expected him to call the police to have the remains removed and interred at the cemetery, but no, that's not what old soldiers do. A few days later, the few remaining men from his platoon got together and went back up there to do what they thought was right. They removed the remains from where he fell and moved them to a spot overlooking the place where the hospital used to be and interred them in a soldier's unmarked grave to keep watch over his post forever. Next story. A few years ago, me and my dad were ice fishing for walleyes on a small section of the Hudson that freezes pretty solid if the temperature says low. Nighttime is the best fishing for walleyes, and we both enjoy the experience. Anyway, the particular spot is a bit of a hike to get to. Not what I call remote, but it's pretty isolated. We usually head in before sundown to get set up and fish until dawn. We get all our gear set up, tip-ups baited and sounded, and got camp squared away. It was a crystal clear night, very little wind, and the temperature was -3. We were watching the sky and, well, I can only describe what we saw to this day. I'm not sure what it was. Strange lights. One actually kind of looked like a flare. It grew steadily in intensity before going completely dark. Some were bobbing and weaving. Others actually sort of looked like running lights on low-flying aircraft. But they were close, and everything was dead silent. Me and my dad clearly remember looking at each other to see if we were really seeing the same thing, and we were pretty damn scared. This went on for about an hour or so. We sat together on the bank of the Hudson watching those lights. When it was over, we packed up and got the hell out of there. We've talked about it a few times over the years, and neither one of us is sure exactly what we saw. What we do agree on is that we did see something, and it did scare the crap out of us. When we got home that night, we were both exhausted, like we'd been working all day. Just wore out. It was the fear. I've been afraid since that day, but nothing has even come close to making me feel like I did that night. Next story. You can really rely on the senses of certain animals. We have 5 dogs, one of which has proven herself. She barked very violently at our neighbor when he came into our front yard to talk to me. Scared me because I never ever saw her act like that or make those sounds in 5 years of owning her. But I was mostly just embarrassed that she looked like such a mean dog. The next month, I caught him looking into my house and watching me exercise. She now comes with me every time I go out in the woods. I don't feel safe without her. But here's another story. I was very pregnant, and my mother-in-law decided to do me a much-appreciated favor and hire a lawn service for a few months. We had a pinto mini pot-bellied pig that lived out in the yard, but I brought her in the house so that she wouldn't get in the way of the lawn crew. Anyway, the men show up to do the lawn work on the first day. They were outside working, and my piggy went insane. She started attacking the sliding glass door over and over. I'd never seen her be anything but sweet to strangers. A few weeks later, I was watching the news, and the boss owner, who was one of the guys working in the yard that day, was wanted by the police. He had kidnapped the woman that he was working for and held her in a motel and tortured her for several days. He probably would have killed her, but she got out of her ties and escaped when he left for a few minutes. Sounds off the chart, but it is true. Happened in Eugene, Oregon, almost 30 years ago. Oswaldo Zambrano is his name, and yep, police caught him. Next story. I love to hunt alone. I like company, but I also like to challenge myself and get over my fear of the dark, the wild, the unknown. I have a superb sense of direction, and I've rarely gotten disoriented. I have no need for GPS, as I use my internal sense of direction and maps when I'm getting off the grid into a new area. I also have spent a great deal of time in the woods alone and carry a Taurus 357 with a 3-inch barrel, even when I'm also carrying a rifle. I started doing this after I was hunting once and leaned my rifle up against a tree to answer nature's call and walked about 10 yards from my gun to go to the bathroom, only to then be startled by sounds nearby that indicated a large animal was going through the trees. Yes, I was literally caught with my pants down, so the pistol in my shoulder holster stays with me 24/7 when in the wild from that moment on. Anyway, I also enjoy packing my gear in and hunting from a small base camp I established, usually a few miles from any civilization. In this story, I hiked in near Empire, Colorado, to an area of a former mining village known as Empire City. There are many collapsed miners' cabins in the area, abandoned mines, investigative digs, etc. I have a great place where the miners had created a small pond by diverting Mill Creek through a ditch they dug. Quite an accomplishment. The old diversion is still very visible and must have been backbreaking work to dig that thing over 200 yards through rocks. The pond is now dry, and it's a wonderful open area surrounded by trees. After a long day of hunting in the snow, I return cold and wet to my tent. I don't usually build fires because I don't want the smell of smoke on my clothing, as the deer or elk can smell it. I ate jerky and trail mix, cooked some tea, and went to bed to read a book. Now, before I go on, I'd hiked and hunted all around my area, putting in probably 10 hours of walking. There were no other hunters within miles of my campsite. Most hunters drive their 4x4s through Empire, along Highway 40 between Idaho Springs, going toward Winter Park, and then go up to the ridge. Whenever I hike up there, I'll find 5 or 6 hunting camps, but that is at least 2 miles from my spot, which is why I picked that area. No one hunts there, as it is only accessible after a long hike, which most hunters aren't willing to do. To be honest, there is a trail some folks drive their ATVs on and sometimes camp within 500 yards of my area. But I had scouted that area and it was uninhabited, and I would have heard any vehicle coming into that very remote, difficult to reach area. So I was 100% sure I was alone. After a while, I began to hear the weirdest sound. At first, I thought it was coyotes about 100 yards away, but then I realized it was a woman singing. I could hear some talking and laughter, and then the woman would sing again, kind of like a poorly trained person singing opera. I could clearly hear very distinct notes. Once in a while, her voice seemed to break, and she missed the note. I'm a musician, so off-tune singing is something I'm trained to hear, and it bothers me. It went on for hours. The singing would stop, and I'd hear voices, a conversation between several people, then the singing started again. By about 2 a.m., it finally quit. I remained awake for a while with my pistol close by, and eventually fell asleep. Early the next morning, I got up, started hunting, and went to check to see if anyone had put up camp unexpectedly at the only nearby locations where the ATVs sometimes go. It was totally empty. So, what was that sound? I'm agnostic on the idea of ghosts, but it sure as hell got me thinking that I was hearing a residual haunting of old miners and maybe one of their wives haunting the area. I never felt threatened, but it was very eerie. Another quasi-related story. We used to live in a house in the woods near Granby, Colorado. My sister swears to me that one evening she was walking down the hall in the basement where there are multiple garden-level windows. She looked out the window and saw the ghost of an Indian boy standing outside the window, looking into the home curiously. Their eyes met. He looked over at her for several seconds and then vanished. She was quite young when that happened, so I never gave her much credence. But during my experience, I thought back on her story and wondered, could it have been true? Next story. About 30 years ago or so, my husband and I were avid shipwreck divers in Lake Michigan. Like every weekend, we went diving on shipwrecks and made about 6 to 8 dives in 2 days. We had a 1956 steel hull inboard boat that was 26 feet long and a great dive boat for sure. You could put as much weight in this boat as you wanted. To carry dive gear of 10 air tanks and all equipment was not a problem. When you stood on the side of the boat to get in or load gear, it never moved down into the water or even budged. This thing was built tough, old and weird looking, but a tough boat. So one day my husband, a dive friend of ours, and myself went out in Lake Michigan to dive a wreck called the Kate Kelly. This ship broke up before sinking, and there are pieces of it and cargo, etc., strewn all over the bottom. So we parked the boat and dropped the anchor. There was not a wisp of wind, nothing. The lake where we were, and we were about 3 miles out, was flat calm to the point of being like a glass of water sitting on a countertop. Not a ripple on the top. We were elated to have the flat calm water and not a soul out near us. No one and no boat could be seen at all. Not even shore. The sun was brightly shining and there was a slight haze to the air. We made one dive and it was great. We all came on board and sat in the back of the boat eating lunch in our dive suits and resting for the next dive. It was so beautiful a day, no one was saying anything. We were just sitting there on the engine cover eating our sandwiches. I was to the back of the boat on the starboard side and could see the anchor line running down into the water, and it was limply hanging there with about 2 feet of loose rope in case a wind came along. I had a white anchor line tied to the bow of the boat, and I could see about 5 feet into the water of the white rope, and was watching the black flies land on the rope buzzing around. The boat was not moving. All of a sudden, the boat and all of us in it started to rise into the air very slowly. I'm not kidding on this, and it is very true. I wasn't scared at all. I was mostly interested in, like, what the heck is this? I saw the anchor line go taut and tighten as we rose up. My husband and our friend and I all looked at each other questioningly, and I could feel us and the boat just raising slowly upward. Then the boat stopped raising. As I leaned over the gunwale and looked down into the water, the boat and us in its entirety was slowly going back down into the water and stopped when the boat was floating on the surface of the water. I saw ripples coming off the boat side, like if you dropped a stone into the water, how the ripples would go outward. The ripples didn't go out too far because we were lowered into the water slowly, not dropped. So my husband and our friend stand up and look over the side into the water. We're looking for whatever made our boat go into the air and didn't see anything. That was one of the weirdest things that I've ever experienced. We all sat around looking at one another like, what was that? Did you feel that? We talked about it as we finished our lunch, then went and made another dive. No one was scared at all, just puzzled. I have no idea what it was, but looking back on the experience, I should have looked up above us or looked out way from the boat to see if anything was there. I always thought maybe a UFO or something was above us, or some meteor with a gravitational pull on steel went overhead. I don't know. And I have heard there are supposed Loch Ness monster things in the Great Lakes. Maybe one of them thought we were a possible mate and went under the boat and lifted it up. Like sometimes the whales do out in the ocean, kind of nudge boats to feel them or something. I have no idea. And the water was 75 feet deep where we were diving. So that is one of my stories that is very true to me because I was there. My husband and I talk about what happened all the time and still wonder what it was that did it. We also kick ourselves for not looking up or out towards the horizon and maybe seeing Nessie swim off into the distance searching for a mate. The only other thing that is possible is this. The guy who found the wreck, Danny, told me that when he found the wreck, it was around midnight. He dropped an anchor and, being very dark underwater, carried his light with him. He was slowly going down the anchor line, and when he first saw a portion of the wreck and artifacts, something grabbed him and spun him around on the anchor line he was holding on to. He said it scared the daylights out of him. He thought a ghost of one of the shipwreck victims did it and was trying to tell him something. Very strange indeed. We dove that wreck for many years, and no other weird things ever happened to us. But that was weird enough to begin with.